Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is House Ag Appropriations Subcommittee Ranking Member Sanford Bishop. The Georgia Democrat joins us to talk debt ceiling, ag appropriations, and the Farm Bill. But first, here's this week's headlines. The National Milk Producers Federation filed a petition seeking reforms to the Federal Milk Marketing Order System. The group says its petition is a more comprehensive approach to reform than the efforts already submitted to USDA by dairy processors. NMPF seeks a variety of payment changes, as well as legislation to periodically reevaluate a key part of the pricing formula. Federal officials separately asked for additional information on a previous petition filed by the International Dairy Foods Association. USDA announced a $420 million investment in a new program to fund projects that will improve agriculture's production capacity in the middle of the supply chain. The Resilient Food Systems Infrastructure Program will link up with state governments to create opportunities for small and mid-sized producers. USDA says projects could be for anything ranging from the processing to the distribution of food products. USDA also unveiled the organizations that will lead the 12 regional food business centers across the country. That $400 million effort will offer help for producers and companies looking to grow their enterprises. And finally, President Joe Biden is set to welcome top Capitol Hill officials for upcoming negotiations to raise the nation's debt ceiling. Biden has invited the Republican and Democratic leaders of the House and Senate for a summit scheduled for Tuesday the 9th. The talks follow House Republican passage of a deal to raise the debt limit, but also to introduce spending restrictions on the federal government. Democrats are pushing for a clean debt limit hike. A bill to that effect was introduced in the House this week. The outcome of the negotiations will touch every facet of the federal government, including ag and food policy. Congressman Sanford Bishop tells us he's keeping a close eye on the talks and is concerned about what the issue might mean for the upcoming Farm Bill.
Well, first of all, I think that the ultimately being cognizant of how much everything costs will certainly have some impact on what we put in the Farm Bill. But we've got to balance that against the needs of our farmers, our ranchers, and our agricultural producers. But more importantly, what we're talking about here are really apples and oranges. You're talking about honoring our obligations versus future spending. That's apples and oranges. Basically, what we're talking about is defaulting on America's debt, money that has already been spent that was authorized, and holding the operations of government hostage to talk about future spending.
So let's look at the possible ramifications here that could come from one proposed solution. We look back to the Budget Control Act days, and there are many farm programs that are still feeling the impacts of the spending caps that were introduced in that legislation. But wondering, what do you think would be the impact? House Republicans have proposed spending caps on discretionary spending across the board, really. What do you think would be the impact on farm programs of further spending caps in addition to those Budget Control Act caps?
I think it would be devastating. I think that if you just look at, for example, our Food Safety Inspection Service, that is a very vital program for Americans. Everybody has to eat. We have to buy food. And the Department of Agriculture Food Inspection Service has to inspect that meat, poultry, eggs. And of course, we've got a supply chain problem, and we want to, if we really are going to have a supply chain problem, let us default and let us try to do these extraordinarily devastating cuts that they're talking about. We could lose if, for example, the Republican bill is enacted and we have a 22% cut in discretionary spending just in the FSIS. We could lose 400 to 1,800 food safety inspectors.
So one thing that we're watching, at least on our calendar, and I imagine a lot of folks on Capitol Hill are watching on their calendars as well, is next week we are expecting the Congressional Budget Office to come out with updated baseline figures for Farm Bill spending. I wonder, as an appropriator and an Ag Committee member, What do you think of the requests at this point to increase the Farm Bill baseline? Do you think those requests will ultimately be able to be granted given the tight budget environment and given the CBO figures are unknown at this point, but given the already tight budget environment?
Let me say this. Agriculture is not a partisan issue. Everybody has to eat. Everybody is impacted by the services of the Department of Agriculture every single day, and certainly by the services that come under our Agriculture Appropriations Bill, including FDA. This Farm Bill is a five-year plan for our production and for our agriculture industry. If you don't have it adequately funded, Americans will not be able to have the highest quality, the safest, the most affordable, and the most economical food and fiber anywhere in the industrialized world as we are. That's a defense issue. It's a health issue.
So you say that if it's not adequately funded, that that food system will not be able to stand up. But is the current baseline adequate?
Absolutely. I believe that reasonable minds will prevail at the end of the day. I think that when you look at what we have to have in order to continue to do that, I think reasonable minds will decide that we can make some decisions to do the things that we need to do. There are just so many things that we can't shortchange, and everything, the cost of everything has gone up. We've got to reflect our values, and we've got to serve the American people's needs. And that's what this Farm Bill is designed to do. We've been having hearings over the last 2 years to try to hear from our producers what we need. And they've told us, and it comes with the price tag. And I think we have an obligation as stewards of the American people to do the right thing and to do what's needed.
We'll be right back with more from Congressman Bishop right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer, you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. Some House Republicans are floating the idea of restricting the Ag Secretary's use of the Commodity Credit Corporation, but Georgia Democrat Sanford Bishop says that's an idea he does not support.
Absolutely not. The CCC was put there for the very reasons that we're using it. It's interesting that when Republicans are in charge, they don't like to see the Secretary be able to utilize the CCC to meet the needs of our farmers and our producers, which is what it was designed to do. This secretary comes in and has the identical authority, and we have many needs that have developed that have come to the forefront. And I think the secretary is appropriately using the CCC consistent with its purposes to address those needs and those issues that are faced by our producers.
I want to wrap up with a question that kind of overlaps between Ag Committee and Appropriations Subcommittee conversations. And that, of course, as we head into this next Farm Bill, a lot of folks looking at ag research saying that it should be a very big priority, and it's something that should involve mandated spending through the Farm Bill rather than annual appropriated spending through the Appropriations Subcommittee. I guess your thoughts on that line of thinking, moving research funding over to mandated spending and perhaps taking away some of the authority, some of the jurisdiction of the Appropriations Subcommittee at the same time?
Well, let me just say, without a shadow of a doubt, we've got to have cutting-edge research. And in America, we have had that, and the Appropriations Committee has fully funded it. American agriculture is the best anywhere in the world, and it's because of our research. So we're not short on research. Being able to mandate it, I think, really ties the hands. We need to have that flexibility to send that research where the needs arise. When we have a particular infestation and we need research on a particular pest or a particular swine disease or whatever, we should have that flexibility. It shouldn't be locked in. And I believe that as an appropriator and in the best interest of our country, we should have that discretion. And particularly in light of our discussions about being fiscally responsible.
Congressman Bishop, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel, but first, our Hannah Pagel takes a look at a critical aspect of government funding and how it impacts the Farm Bill.
Federal government spending is either mandatory after being authorized in laws like the Farm Bill, or discretionary, funding determined from year to year by the congressional appropriations process. Most Farm Bill spending is mandatory, and it happens in two ways, either by setting rules for eligibility, as with commodity programs, crop insurance, or the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or by fixing certain spending levels, which is how it handles conservation programs. Then there's a smaller amount of spending on what's called discretionary programs. Those provisions are authorized, but not funded in the Farm Bill, and include things like rural development, international food aid, research, and department staffing. Every year, appropriators must decide how much funding to award these programs. Right now, discretionary spending is at the center of a debate over the government's debt ceiling. Republicans have called for capping spending on these programs to fiscal 2022 levels and then allowing their dollar figures to grow just 1% each year. If enacted, that policy would limit the future growth of discretionary spending. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Who's the number one protein source in chicken feed? You are. Who just increased sales to Egypt by 700%? You did. Who made a huge deal with Goodyear? You again. Take a victory lap. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, you're making sales. You're making breakthroughs that all come back to your bottom line. That's you. That's who. As your soy checkoff. Moving soy forward. Moving you forward.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Going to convene a panel discussion now to continue our talks about the debt ceiling, the appropriations process, and the Farm Bill. Joined by Jessica Shulkin with the Russell Group and James Glick with the Tory Advisory Group. Appreciate both of you taking the time to join us. And James, I'm going to go to you first because you're coming to the Tory Advisory Group from a time on Capitol Hill at the Senate Agriculture Committee. And folks are kind of looking at this current debt ceiling to appropriations to Farm Bill process and maybe getting a little bit of deja vu with what became the 2014 Farm Bill. I wonder, as a veteran of that process and someone that saw it up close, any particular lessons learned from that, from the Budget Control Act of 2011, of all those things, any lessons learned there that you think should be applicable and maybe thought about here as folks combat the current situation?
Yeah, no, Spencer, good question. I think kind of looking back at that 11, 12, 13, 14 process is one that I think a lot of folks try to forget. But the ag committees, I mean, you've got a couple of folks, Senator Stabenow, primarily, who was in the same seat, those many years ago. The committee came together in a secret Farm Bill process, identified savings, and found cuts across the bill. And so I think those are some of the lessons learned that, the ag committees can come together when times are tough. They can make tough decisions and kind of do so in a bipartisan, bicameral fashion. But I also think the ag committee is the only committee that sort of followed through on that direction. And the sequester took effect and it impacted programs that the department administers as a result. So I think some of the lessons learned, at least from the committee's perspective, I suspect are sort of to sit tight and kind of wait and see how the overall process plays out, and then to kind of move forward with the Farm Bill as they've been doing, listening to stakeholders and making those decisions on policy as we look at the weeks and months ahead.
So we look back to the 2018 Farm Bill. That's a piece of legislation passed under unified Republican control. But you look back to the 14 Farm Bill, and a similar situation: Democratic administration, Democratic Senate, Republican House. What do you think has changed, perhaps, as we look at the current makeup of Capitol Hill since then, and how do you expect that to impact the upcoming Farm Bill?
Yeah, I think a couple of similarities, a couple of differences. Main differences, I'd say, are the margins are a lot tighter when you look at the bodies. Particularly at the House with the Republican majority. And so that we've seen that in Democrat majorities in recent past as well. When you have a tight margin, it's really challenging to get your members on the same page. And I think the McCarthy in the House did that last week. And so you've got a very unified Republican position in the House and the Senate. And I think that sort of bodes well as they come to the table in the week ahead with the White House to kind of find a path forward here. I think the other thing that's is really clear to point to is that there is unified position across the parties, across the members of all stripes and spectrums, that we do not want to default. That as a country, I think folks all have the understanding that given where the economy is today, where interest rates are, you look at the banking sector, that kind of getting too close to this date and kind of getting to the precipice of a default is not where we want to be. And I'd say back in 2011, there was maybe a little bit more willingness to get up close and to that line. The other thing I would note is, then Vice President Biden was a key negotiator back in 2011. And so you look at where we sit today and kind of still at that negotiation table, I think is something key to kind of point to.
Jessica, one more Farm Bill question before I kind of want to pivot things over to the appropriations process. You know, as we think about the fact that we've got these CBO figures that we're expecting here next week, of course, all eyes of Capitol Hill and throughout the D.C. Beltway and across the country, really, going to be watching those figures very closely. I wonder, obviously we haven't seen the figures yet, but how do you expect that they will ultimately impact the Farm Bill process? And is it a situation where they might speed up or maybe slow down this reauthorization effort?
It's either going to make their job harder or easier. When you look at reference prices, et cetera, there are a lot of things at stake here. And obviously the cost of the nutrition programs, people have a keen eye to that. So I don't know that it's going to speed anything up. They may, if the costs come in and not in good fashion, they may slow things down, but I don't see them necessarily speeding anything up.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. There may be progress in the two sides sitting down to discuss the debt ceiling issue, but Jessica Shulkin with the Russell Group says she doesn't expect the upcoming meeting to yield any kind of landmark agreement.
I don't necessarily think that we'll get a lot out of the first meeting, right? I think you're going to see that sort of as a touch the gloves for months and months. The Republicans have been calling on the administration to reach out for that request, and the administration has said, pass your debt ceiling bill. Both of those things have now happened. And so even though I think all sides remain very publicly far apart, and, they're saying we don't want a short-term extension, and we don't want a clean debt increase, and we don't want to add things to it. At least now they're going to be talking. All that said, they're going to have to talk quickly because there are only about 8 or 9 legislative days left before we hit the debt ceiling, according to the Treasury Secretary. And so, they're going to need to move really, really quickly on this. I don't expect to see much on May the 9th. If Congress does nothing well, it's, sort of waiting until closer to a deadline to get things done. But I do think probably within several days after that, we'll see negotiations come up. But I really don't expect anybody to walk out of the meeting on next week and say, we've shifted our position significantly.
Well, and let's hearken back then to the, you know, the last time that this issue was quite as pronounced as it is now, going back to the Budget Control Act days and the resulting spending cuts, some programs still feeling the impact of that. Wonder, you know, that's been sort of proposed as part of a Republican package, but I wonder, what do you think would be the impact of another round of cuts similar to what was observed in the Budget Control Act?
Well, I mean, we're still living with the cuts that were imposed in the Budget Control Act. You know, it's a 5.7% cut to, you know, all of the farm programs through 2031. And so those cuts are still in place. And so you're just going to be, you know, people tend to forget about them because they've been in place for a while and you're used to what the new normal is. But, you know, to see things on top of that, I think it hurts programs that, you know, producers and others depend on every day. And you really feel it, obviously, you know, in the first couple of years. It's a relatively easy way out, you know, obviously to punt the problem down the road and to spread the pain over the next 10, 15, however many years. And if you remember, after the original Budget Control Act, the sequester sort of continued, it became the pay for a variety of things and got extended further and further into the out years. And so you could see that happen again as well.
James, I want to wrap up the conversation with you because obviously going into this farm bill reauthorization, folks already knew it was going to be a tight budget environment, and yet many groups were still presenting requests that were going to cost money in this farm bill. But as you kind of stare into your legislative crystal ball, how do you think this debt ceiling debate and the potential outcome of it will ultimately impact the budget environment facing the farm bill?
Well, I do think, I mean, you know, depending on how things shake out next week and the coming days, you know, could be an impact on the resources question. But I do think resources has always been a challenge. And so the committees will sort through that. You know, they will find ways to shift funds into where there are new priorities. I think looking at the overall picture of where the ag economy is, kind of the stresses that farmers are feeling, kind of where profitability heads, that it sort of begs the case for really thinking about sort of those resources that might be needed for things like we keep hearing on the House side and the Senate side across the country on reference prices, et cetera. But I also think, you know, support for crop insurance, you know, that farm safety net. But I also think the nutrition piece is one that folks, you know, that ceiling puts a big spotlight on, and sort of the need for work requirements. You know, they've been waived for the last 2 years because of the COVID pandemic and the emergency that's going to be lifted here later this month. And so we'll see those effects start taking effect in the weeks and months ahead as well.
Fascinating times in farm policy as we await the results of that debt ceiling meeting, as well as the Congressional Budget Office figures next week. We'll keep a close eye on that, as will Jessica and James. Folks, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers, but first, our Lydia Johnson takes a look at the folks working on their first farm bill in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Many members of both the House and Senate Ag Committees are currently working on their first farm bill. That may cause challenges for ag groups and other advocacy organizations trying to shape the legislation and inform new members how the bill's programs work. 12 members of the Senate Ag Committee are working on their first farm bill, while 11 are returning from 2018. Many of those returners are also veterans of previous bills. New members heavily outnumber farm bill veterans on the House Ag Committee. 38 representatives are working on their first farm bill, while 14 are returning. Two Democrats on the committee were not on it during the last farm bill process, but have been on the committee for previous reauthorizations. The committee also includes a former chairman, Oklahoma Republican Frank Lucas, who rejoined the panel this Congress. It's important to note that some of the members working on the bill for the first time may not be entirely new to their respective committees. Some became members in the 2018 or 2020 election cycles, while others joined just this year. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Register now for the 2023 AgriPulse Food and Ag Issues Summit in California. The event will offer participants a full day of presentations and panel discussions. You can hear from members of the California Legislature, food and agriculture leaders, along with industry experts and academics. The summit takes place on June 5th at the Sheraton Grand Sacramento and through our virtual experience. View the latest information and register today under the Events tab at agripulse.com.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot, We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack will be among the featured speakers at the Aim for Climate Summit in D.C. Monday through Wednesday. The Senate Ag Committee will host Xochitl Torres-Small for a confirmation hearing to be USDA's next Deputy Ag Secretary, and the Congressional Budget Office will release updated baseline budget projections on Friday, which will have major funding implications for the next farm bill. We'll have the latest farm policy news throughout the week on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.